Reading from Bhajan Rahasyam by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we'll discuss Shashta Yam Sadhan. This is chapter 6 of the book, and this is the 6th stage of devotional service, or let's say 6th stage of chanting the holy name, Hari Ram. And this is Hari Ram, Hari Ram. This represents the level of bhava, and we're having some discussion. Yesterday we heard about this ruchibis, these characteristics of bhava. First, at the level of bhava, there's these three very sweet tastes manifest in the heart, and they're the bhagavat prapti abhilash and this anukulya abhilash, acting favorably, desiring to attain the Lord. Soharda Abhilash. Soharda Abhilash means surit. Riddhi means heart. Almost sound, it's interesting. Soharda. Soharda in Sanskrit sounds like the word heart. We say H-E-A-R-T, heart. So it's harda, H-A-R-D-A. Very similar word, English and Sanskrit. Soharda means good heart. Desiring to serve the Lord with affection. So we had mentioned this one verse we had quoted, describing that some of those points. So I want to describe still again more of those, because these particular sentences of bhava are described in three verses of this chapter. So this is partially a review. So this special transcendental bhava, which we describe, it actually descends from the hearts of Krishna's eternal associates, such as Rupa Manjari, Rati Manjari, Ananga Manjari, Lita Sakhi, and others. How does it descend? How does it come to us? How does it enter our heart? How does this ray, we call the definition of bhava is prema amshu. Prema amshu. We say sri amshu. Prema amshu means that it's a ray. It's a ray of prema. That's like the sun. The sun is very, very far away from us, millions and millions of miles away. But it's emanating so much intense light and heat. Although we're so far away, some rays of the sun are coming down to us, shining on our face and warming our skin and nourishing our body and giving us some good effect here. It's just a few rays are coming. The whole sun is not coming. If the whole sun was to come on our face, then we'd be effaced. If the whole sun hit our face, we'd be effaced and erased, and we would be extinct from the human race. There would be no more left of our face. Nothing left of our face. So, fortunately, only one ray comes, and that's sufficient. So bhava is considered to be one ray of the sun, Surya. This is like Amshu. It's like one ray of the sun of prema. It's very illuminating. At the level of bhava, one becomes illuminated with this Samvit Shakti. Becomes when bhava shines in one's heart and one's mind, one becomes illuminated with transcendental knowledge, vigyan, bhakti vigyan, realized transcendental knowledge, and one's heart becomes softened and illuminated with transcendental knowledge, and one's heart becomes softened with very strong desires and abhilash for the attaining the Lord of his life and serving the Lord favorably and serving with affection. These three types of abhilash. So it comes down through the parampara. This bhava comes from the hearts and comes down to parampara. That's why there's so much emphasis on this term, rupanuga. We say rupanuga, where we are followers of Rupa Goswami, anugata. Another term is called anugatya. We should be anugatya of the Vaishnavas. We should be in line. We should not be out of line. They have this term sometimes you've heard maybe in English, at least American slang. So he's out of line. That guy is really out of line. He's out, or they say out to lunch even sometimes. He's out to lunch. It's quite a colloquial expression. Out to lunch doesn't mean he's eating. It doesn't mean he's eating in a hotel or eating in a dhaba. It means he's out of it. He's off the line. He's out of the line. So independence is not so much appreciated in the line of spiritual realization. Independence is the line of yoga. Gyan Marg and Yoga Marg, these are the lines of independence. This is called Swatantra Marg. Swatantra Marg means the path of independence. Swatantra means independence. So the independent paths, so-called independent paths. But the independent paths are yoga, Yoga Marg, Gyan Marg. A bhakti is dependent path. As I mentioned numerous times, it's called Avaroha Panta. A path of descending path. The mercy comes down. So this is very much we declare our dependence on God. There was one BTG in 1976 we were distributing on the streets. July was the independence celebration of America. 1776 they became independent from British rule. In 1776, not 1947. In 1776, and then 200 years later, 1976, they were celebrating, big party, 200-year birthday party, 200 years independence from Britain. So the title article on the cover said, Declaring Our Dependence on God. Because everyone's so proud of their... We're independent from Britain. We're independent. Swatantra. Self-rule. Swarajya, they say in India. Gandhi was saying, Swarajya, Swarajya. And then the British were meeting with Gandhi at the time. They say, if we give you independence, you are not capable of ruling yourselves. You want Swarajya. You want to be your own... you want Swatantra and Swarajya. You want to be your own rulers and make your own decisions. But you people are not qualified to rule your own country. You're all backward, primitive heathens. So we can't grant you, because he was asking peacefully, please grant us self-rule, Swarajya. Please grant us this independence. And then the British told this to Gandhi. Then Gandhi's reply was this. Then he said, okay, you're saying we're not qualified. Then give us independence. Give us a choice, at least to make the wrong decision. Give us rule of our own country, but give us that freedom to rule, give us the freedom to make the wrong decision. Maybe we make the wrong decision, but give us that freedom. Because they're saying you're not qualified to rule and make decisions. So he was saying, no, give us independence so we can rule. Give us the freedom to make the wrong decision. And they've done a good job of that. They've done a good job of making wrong decisions. Taking Bhagavad Gita out of the school, taking Sanskrit out of the curriculum, and making the state secular, separating religion and state. They've done a really good job of ruining India. The India that was, the glory of India was rapidly evaporating. So this mercy, this bhava actually descends from the hearts of these great devotees. So we should be anugati. We must be following it. We must be in line. Anugati means to be in line. Rupanugadhara. Rupanugadhara. Dhara means the current, the river, the flow. The flow of mercy coming from the heart of Rupa Goswami down to the heart of Rati, Rupa Goswami to Raghunath Das Goswami, and from Sanat Goswami's heart, from Lord Chaitanya's heart to Rupa Goswami's heart, from Rupa Goswami's heart to Raghunath Das Goswami's heart, from Raghunath Das Goswami's heart down to Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, and from Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami down through Vishwanath, and down through Jagannath Bab and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is called the Rupanuga Dhara, the current, the descending current of mercy, of love, of bhava, of realization, of knowledge, transcendental knowledge, samvit and ladini, is packed up inside their bhava shakti, bhava bhakti. And it comes like a ray of sun from the sunshine of Radharani's heart. That sunshine is reflected into the heart of Mahaprabhu. And the sunshine of Mahaprabhu's heart is reflected into the heart of Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam. Manobishtam means that Rupa Goswami, he knows Manobishtam. Mano means heart. He knows the heart's desire, Abhishta. Abhishta, this word Abhishta or Abhilash. Abhishta, Abhilash or Icha. Or calm. These are different words which means desire, and they have different shades of meaning. So Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam. He knows the heart's desire of Sri Chaitanya. Who knows? Rupa Goswami. Kadamayam Rupa Goswami. So what was in Lord Chaitanya's heart is reflected as a ray, Suryamshu, Premamshu. Premamshu, Suryamshu, reflected into the heart of Rupa Goswami, who reflected into the heart of Raghunath Das Goswami, his Shiksha disciple, and of course Jiva Goswami, his other Shiksha disciple, and onto the heart of Krishna. And this comes down the parampara. So any of us, if we want to receive this bhava bhakti, it comes down through parampara. Therefore, guru is required. Without guru, no perfection is possible. So then, what happens, it comes down through guru parampara, and this bhava bhakti, or this swarup shakti, it touches our hearts. Then when it touches our hearts melt. For example, if you take a magnifying glass and you go outside in a hot summer day and you take some dry paper, some dry leaves, and you focus that magnifying glass, you allow the sun to pass through one side of the magnifying glass. The magnifying glass concentrates the rays of the sun and you fix it on the piece of paper or the dry leaves, and they become very, very hot. The magnifying glass increases the intensity and concentration of the sun rays. Have you ever done this? This is quite a common Boy Scout trick. Boys like to do things like make fires. It's quite a universal pastime. Boys love to make fires with matches or lighters or magnifying glasses or whatever. Firebugs. Play with the material energy. So then you make a fire. The sun concentrates and makes a fire. So this is what happens, is the guru parampara is the sunlight, and then the heart, the purified heart, is the magnifying glass. Let's say the purified heart, the consciousness, is the magnifying glass. And when the consciousness, the chit darpan, when the mirror of the consciousness, chaita darpana marjan, when it's purified by nam sankirtan, then that purified consciousness concentrates that ray, those rays of bhakti coming from guru and coming from the heart of the Nitya Parishads. They become concentrated, and when they shine on the heart, passing through that magnifying glass of purified consciousness, then the heart doesn't burn, but it melts. It's like if you had a huge block of ice, and then you took that same magnifying glass and focused the sun's rays through the magnifying glass onto the block of ice, you could bore a hole in that block of ice very quickly. You could melt that ice. Very hard block of ice you could melt with that concentrated sun rays. So the concentrated sun rays of the mercy of the heart of the liberated souls is known as the Swarup Shakti, which is Ladini and Samvit, is Bhakti Shakti or Bhav. And it comes and shines to our heart, then that melts our heart. It actually melts our heart. So what is the meaning of melting the heart? Because this is the definition of Bhav. In the definition of Bhav, there's a word called Mashrinu. Mashrinu means melting of the heart. Always heart is melting. So Vishnu Chakravarti explains, this is a review, that melting of the heart includes a mixture of three feelings or tastes. These three tastes first arise at the level of ruchi, but become intense at the stage of bhav. So we talked about ruchi. Ruchi means taste. So there's ruchi in bhakti, then there's asakti in bhakti, and then there's bhava. So ruchi and asakti, these are in the levels of sadhana, asadaka. And then when one becomes more perfect, it comes to the level of bhava bhakti. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti. So that's why I said that it's not that ruchi ends and then there's something called asakti. There's overlapping. Ruchi has attachment, and ruchi also has some rays of bhav, and then asakti has ruchi and also has attachment and more rays of bhav. And then bhava also has ruchi, but much deeper ruchi, and also deeper attachment, and then also mixtures of bhav. So there's a gradual intensifying. Everything really begins to swell, and everything really begins to develop and mature and happen at the stage of ruchi. Ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prema are different shades of the same perfection. But this anartha nivritti and nishtha is basically swimming across the ocean and drying off. Anartha nivritti means swimming across the ocean. Nishtha means taking a towel and drying the water off. And you swim across the ocean of anarthas, you're all wet. You get on the other side, the other shore of the spiritual world, you dry off. That's nishtha. And when you're dried off, you start moving in a new land. You've left an old land on one side of the ocean, you cross the ocean, which was, you got anartha nivritti, aparads, anarthas, and avidya. Then you came to the dry shore of a new land, the shore of the spiritual land, spiritual world, at the shore, at the beach, at the edge, the border. Then there's still some wet from being in the water, so you dry off. That's nishtha, drying out, getting steady, getting warm, getting fluid, and mobile, then you start progressing on the spiritual terrain, the spiritual firmament, and then Ruchi is there, and then Asakti, then Baba and Prema. Just keep walking closer and closer. You want Prema, then and Ruchi, you start to feel Krishna, then Asakti, you start to perceive Krishna, then in Baba, you start to see Krishna, then Prema, you embrace Krishna. It's like this. So once we come to the level of Ruchi, and our feet are on spiritual soil, spiritual terrain. But we're close to the ocean, so we could go back. An alligator could come up and grab us by the ankle and pull us back, like Gajendra. Gajendra was on the land, and the crocodile snatched him off the land, pulled him in the water. So the crocodiles of Aparad can still catch us at the level of Ruchi or Asakti. With Baba, we're pretty far away from the ocean by that time. We're pretty much inland. We made some good ingress into the spiritual firmament. We kind of left the ocean far behind. But when you're at the level of Ruchi and even Asakti, even still, you're pretty close to the water's edge. You have to be careful. There's some kind of visual understanding I'm giving here. So what are these three tastes that arise? They also arise at the level of Ruchi, which is Ruchi and Asakti. Now we're at the level of Bhav, which is somewhat beyond, quite a bit beyond Ruchi. But we find these same things, but a much deeper and profound expression of these three abhilashas. Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, Anukulya Abhilash, and then this Sohardha Abhilash. Desire to attain Krishna, desire to serve Him favorably for His pleasure, and desire to serve Him with love, with affection, with tender loving care. These are the three abhilashas which actually begin to arise at the level of Ruchi. Because of the, you realize at the level of Ruchi, the very much, to a great extent, you realize Krishna the person. He's really a person. He's really my friend. He's really with me, around me, guiding me, following me, inside of me. And that becomes very deep at the level of Bhava. So therefore these three abhilashas become very deep, and Vishnu describes them like this. This Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash is very easy for people to know Hindi. Bhagavat means the Supreme Personality of God, the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Madhav, Damodar, Shamsundar. Prapti means to attain or acquire, or have or to hold. And Abhilash means desire, to hanker, to want. Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash, intense hankering to attain one's Ishtadev. Very nice analogy here. Please hear this. A mother is waiting at home for her two sons to return from school. One son comes back home after school. Then the mother says, "Where's the other son?" And the first son says, "I don't know, I couldn't find him, he got lost somewhere." So now when the mother hears that the second son became lost, she becomes very upset, and she can't eat anything or do anything. She can only think, she's only thinking, when will I embrace my son again? When will I smell his head? When will I see him? She's so much concerned and worried about her son. So this is kind of the feeling that comes when Baba actually touches the heart. The feelings also come in our heart. Kaha Mora Prananath. Where is my beloved Nanda Nandan? Who can help me find him? My heart is breaking without seeing him. So this is like the mother will be thinking, "Oh, okay, you couldn't find your brother, so you came home. You're not so concerned." But I'm concerned. I can't eat. I can't do anything until I see him. Where is my son? Has anyone seen my son? Have you seen my son? And she becomes frantic. If he doesn't come after some hours, she starts looking here and there. Where's my son? Where's my son? I have to find my son. I can't be at peace. I can't be happy till I find my son. So the same thing is there. When Baba touches the heart, you become all oblivious to this whole world. You don't care about anything in this world, eating, sleeping, anything. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Can you show me Krishna? Where can I find my Krishna? My heart is breaking without seeing him, because this is, Baba is just a step away from, or a shade, a few moments away from Prema. Baba is the precursor to Prema. So there's some verses here that describe this mood in the Bhajan Rahasya, verses 18 through 21. Bhagavat Prapti Avilash. This describes, this verse 18 of Bhajan Rahasya, chapter 6, text 18, describes Krishna's beauty and anurag, or Krishna's sweet beauty. Krishna's beauty attracts the hearts of all. In the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 24, I don't know if it's ninth, I think it may be a misprint, but it says there's, the number is wrong here, but I think so, I'm not sure, I didn't confirm. There's one verse from the Bhagavatam describes Vrishabhasi's anger towards Brahma for making eyes that blink and thus obstruct their vision of Krishna while they drink the beauty of his form. I think many devotees have heard this verse from the very beginning when you join Krishna consciousness. You hear that the gopis have so much. Everyone hears there's some entity, there's some type of devotee called gopis, and they have so much love for Krishna that they curse the creator. Oh, the creator's a dunce. The creator doesn't know how to create well. He doesn't know his science very well, his art very well. He has made the human being with eyelids which blink, and when they blink, it prevents us from having darshan of Krishna. In other books it says the gopis are praying, why the creator couldn't have given us Meenakshi? Why Brahma didn't give us eyes like a fish? Because the fish eyes don't have any eyelids. The eyes of a fish are always open. They don't have eyelids. I don't know how they sleep. They sleep with their eyes open or something. But they don't have any eyelids. So the gopis say, oh, creator, why didn't you give us eyes like a fish? So that way there'd never be any blinking. Because for that 1/60th of a second or 1/1000th of a second when the eyes blink, that 1/1000th of a second separation from Krishna is too much. We can't bear it. We can't stand it to not see Krishna for that 1/1000th of a second when our eyes blink. So the gopis were speaking this. Yasyana makra kundala charu karna prajat kapola subagam suvilasa hasam niyotsavam natar tatripur trishibi pipantyo naryo narascha murita kupita nimescha. The makara shaped earrings that swing on Sri Krishna's ears play in the lake of his cheeks. And this splendor increases even further the beauty of Krishna's cheeks. When Krishna smiles with enjoyment, the bliss that is always present on his face is increased. With the cups of their eyes, all men and women drink the nectarine beauty of Krishna's lotus face. However, they never find satisfaction. And moreover, they become angry with Brahma for creating eyes that blink and thus obstruct their relish of the sweetness. This is Gopi's verse. And then it says here some commentary. So in a very happy mood in the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami is describing the sweetness of Krishna's beautiful form to Maharaj Parikshit. When the Vrishabhasis see the beauty of Krishna's form, they're overwhelmed with love, and their own loving attachment, anurag, is unlimitedly amplified, attaining a delightfulness beyond description. The Brajasundaris, filled with Mahabhav, that means the Brajagopis, they relish Krishna's extraordinary beauty, Rupa Madhurya, to its fullest extent due to their very thick and deep anurag. The gopi sentiments are on the topmost level. And although there is no higher position, the transcendental moods of the gopis keep increasing. In this stage of anurag, which is a very high level of intense love, which is indescribable, the gopis experience nothing but ras. And finally they attain the ultimate stage of mahabhav. This is the wealth of the Brajasundaris and no one else. The cheeks of Sri Krishna are surrounded by curly locks of hair and radiant with divine earrings known as Makara Kundala. Makara means like a dolphin or a porpoise. Sometimes they describe as shark-shaped earrings. Not exactly. Actually, a makara is a very strange creature. Hamakara is what the Indologists say is a mythological sea creature. Mythological sea creature. Well, we don't say mythological sea creature, but a makara was a particular species of fish that did exist or does exist in some hidden way, if it still exists here. It had the body of a porpoise. The body of a porpoise had the mouth of a crocodile. It had the nose of an elephant. So it has a body like porpoise fish, and then the mouth is very long, like an alligator, crocodile, many teeth. Then the top of its nose, on the top of its nose, it goes up like an elephant's trunk. Goes up like this. It goes around like this. And you usually see on the end of Krishna's flute, you usually see the decoration of makara. That makara, the mouth is open, there's something going like this. And it should go like that. So it's not a shark, but generally, being at a lot, to make it simple, in a translation, I simply say shark-shaped earrings. You must have seen. Makara kundala. Kundala means earring, kundala. But actually it's a dolphin, alligator, elephant. It's 95% dolphin, 5% alligator, 5% elephant. And they're very much seen in, especially North Indian architecture, temple architecture. They often have this design incorporated in stone arches above doorways, or I've seen different places they incorporate this because this is a symbol of Vamshidhar, of Krishna. Especially in the south, I don't think they have this too much. Not like this. But in north, because they're more, at least in later day, they're more interested. The temples, the Krishna temples, they usually have like this. In the last few hundred years in North India. North Indian architecture for the last 500 years. Because Krishna worship was somewhat became popularized in North India due to the influence of Lord Chaitanya and various kings that patronized the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, who would build these lavish and beautiful temples around North India, especially in Braj Mandal and other places. An eternal festival of unprecedented beauty pervades the charming lotus face of Krishna. In the center of this eternal festival, a gentle, nectarine smile gracefully resides like an emperor of the sweetest of all sweetness. Because Sri Krishna has attained adolescence, which is called Vayas, between the ages of Pauganda and Kishore, happiness, impatience, liveliness and so forth have appeared on his lotus face, revealing his restlessness. So Krishna is a Navayovanam, a newly bloomed youth. It's Pauganda. Pauganda is, of course, Balya Leelas, they say is 0 to 5, then 5 to 10 is Pauganda, and 10 to 15 is Kishore. So Krishna is at the juncture of Pauganda and Kishore. It's called Vayasandhi. Vayasandhi means a juncture of ages. So he looks extremely... he has a restlessness in his face and a boyishness with a touch of adulthood. Krishna's white teeth, which are stained slightly red by chewing tambal, and his reddish lips, endowed with a charming smile, have reached the limit of beauty. It seems that on the full moon night, the moon rays remove the burning suffering of all living entities and give rise to greed in the hearts of the chakora-like devotees. These chakoras are a special type of bird. There's many special creatures in the old days. Makara and Shabara is some type of Sabara is some type of huge lion-type creature. Sabara or something. And then there's a chakora, then chatiki. Very interesting creatures in those days. But the chakora is a type of bird that lives by drinking nectar, moonlight. Very extraordinary. So when there's no moon, he doesn't fly around much. No energy. on the full moon he really enjoys. So it says that Krishna Chandra, the face of Krishna, Krishna Chandra Mukh, the beautiful moon-like face of Krishna, when it rises, like the moon rises over the horizon in the evening time. So when Krishna's face appears in the land of Braj, when Krishna's face arises, when Krishna's moon-like face, beautiful, soothing, glowing, and sweet face arises before the face of the Vrijvasis, and they become like chakora birds. Their eyes become like chakora birds, drinking deeply the rays of Krishna's moon-like face, and they become very satisfied and thrilled by that exchange. And become greedy when the moon, because when the moon rises, the chakoras become very greedy, very excited to relish, drink up those rays and become satisfied. Just like if a man is very hungry, he's very hungry, he's actually greedy for food. Greed means intense want. Intense desire is greed. So if someone doesn't eat for several days, and then you put a big plate of food in front of him, he'll become very greedy, very excited. So the chakora bird, when he sees the full moon, he becomes very greedy to drink the rays of nourishing, succulent, satisfying rays of the full moon. So in the same way, the Vrijvasis, when they see the full moon of Krishna's face rising over the forests of Vrindavan, rising beside the Yamuna, or on the footpaths of Varsan or Nandagram, then their eyes become very greedy to relish the succulent, tasty nectar juice emanating from the moon-like face of Krishna Chandra. There's so much sweetness. When the Braja Devis see the unprecedented sweetness of Sri Krishna's beauty, the ocean of their calm increases. So these are all poetic metaphors by the great Acharyas, like Kavi Karnapur and others, and Krishna's Kaviraj and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. They use so many metaphors to try to describe the indescribable beauty of Krishna. So, of course, everyone knows that when the full moon rises, it also creates, besides the chukora's experience, the full moon also has a great effect on the bodies of water, especially the ocean, or any river or lake, especially the ocean. When the full moon rises over the ocean and the tides increase, the water swells, the ocean waters swell, and the waves become higher, break even higher, and the tide goes higher up on the beach. The waves break higher onto the beach during the full moon. So when that full moon of Krishna Chandra's sweet face rises, then the ocean of lust, ocean of intense desire to please the senses of Krishna, the ocean of transcendental lust within the hearts of the gopis rises. It rises in newer and bigger waves in the presence of that full moon of Krishna's face. These are all very beautiful poetic comparisons that the great Acharyas use to describe the beauty of Krishna's face and the effect. Krishna's face is very beautiful, but what effect does it have? Well, it has effect on all the Vrijvasis. They all become like chakora birds, drinking the nectar and relishing and thriving and living and sustaining themselves by drinking the nectar of Krishna Chandra's beautiful moon-like face. But what about a specific group of Vrijvasis? One specific group are the Braja Devis, the Braja Sundaris, the Braja Gopis, the Sakis, Mandris. When they also become sustained and nourished and satisfied, like chakoras, they also become sustained, nourished, and satisfied by seeing the moon-like face of Krishna. But more than that, more than all the other Vrijvasis, this moon-like face of Krishna has a special effect on their hearts. And it doesn't affect, the moonlight of Krishna's face doesn't affect the hearts of the other Vrijvasis in the same way. It's a unique experience of the Anuragi Gopis. The Anuragi Gopis have this intense Anurag for Krishna. Anurag Bhav Mahabhav. So when they see Krishna's lotus face, then their hearts, the ocean of their hearts starts to rise in tidal waves of anticipation, tidal waves of joy and ecstasy, anticipation of meeting the Lord, and the joy and ecstasy of offering themselves for Krishna's unlimited pleasure. So this is the effect of Krishna, the full moon of Krishna's face on the ocean of their hearts. The ocean of their hearts get rises and rises more and more. It's just beautiful ways of saying, describing Krishna and his devotees, their exchange of love. Krishna's beauty thus destroys the gopis' consideration of family, caste, religion, patience. They become infatuated by Krishna's charm and they drown in an ocean of bliss. The constantly swinging makar-shaped earrings dance on the cheeks of Krishna. on Krishna's gentle, softly smiling face as they embrace, these earrings embrace and kiss his cheeks. And that's what the gopis think. When the gopis see this, Krishna appears in their hearts as a dear Lalita Nayak, which is one of the four types of heroes described in Nectar Devotion. Dear Lalita and Dhirodatta, Dear Prashant and Dhirodatta. But dear Lalita is a hero who is expert in amorous sports and controlled by his lovers and very funny also, joking. Krishna's intention is to embrace the Braja Sundaris and to kiss their breasts is expressed by the kundalas touching and embracing his cheeks. So these earrings of Krishna as he's moving and moving towards the gopis or going to meet the gopis or some avisar love journey or meeting for rasa dance or some night nocturnal pastimes, they're spinning, the earrings are turning and spinning and they're touching his cheek, they're bouncing and touching his cheeks. So it appears they're contacting, so kissing is a form of contact or touch. When two lovers kiss, they're also contacting or touching. So this, the poets, the rasic poets, rasic Vaishnava poets, when they describe Krishna's earrings touching his cheeks, they're saying that these, that when the gopis see this, because they see everything, the gopis see everything, trees and birds and deer and the water, the waves of the Yamuna, and they also see, they see at the gopis, because of their mahabhav and their intense anurag for Krishna, they see animate objects, animate, conscious living beings, trees, birds, deer, peacocks, and flowers, vines. They see them in relation to Krishna and their love for Krishna. And they even see inanimate, immobile objects, and they project their own love and their own intense ecstasy into the grass, into the stones. I mean, the grass is alive, but into the stones, into the earrings, into the flute, Krishna's flute, which is a dry piece of wood. So they say, oh, look at the gopis, look at these makara kundala. They're dancing on Krishna's cheek. They're kissing Krishna's cheek. They're embracing Krishna's cheek. We should be kissing Krishna's cheek. And Krishna should be kissing us or kissing our breasts or kissing our cheek and embracing us. What is this? Hey, the gopis become envious. They become envious of a golden earring, of a silver earring. This is the extraordinary madness of their praying. They start addressing the earrings. Oh, earrings, why do you have that fortune? You don't deserve that fortune. You're simply a hard piece of metal. You have no heart. You have no feelings. Why do you have such an intimate relationship with Krishna? This is not fair. We should be there. Why are you there? We're born in Krishna's village. You're not born here. You're just made somewhere and brought over here. You're coming from Rajasthan. Someone who made these earrings in Rajasthan and sold them to Krishna. We're born in the same village. We're village girls. We're gopas. I mean, we're gopis. We know him from playing from him with him since childhood. You're new here, and you have such a close relationship, tight relationship with him. So they're saying like this: the gopis are not thoroughly satisfied by watching. They're not thoroughly satisfied by watching the festival of Sri Krishna's sweetness in this way. Angry with Brahma for creating eyelids that momentarily interrupt their darshan, they curse Brahma by saying, Brahma is not qualified to create. To view such a beautiful scene, he has given us only two eyes. And even these eyes we have, they have doors on them in the form of eyelids. After dying, we will all become Brahma in our next lives. And then we will show him how to create properly. In other words, we'll become Brahma. Look, you're a foolish creator. When we die, we'll become Brahma in our next life and we'll show you how to create. We'll create gopis that have no eyelids. Eyelidless gopis. And then the gopis are saying, two eyes alone are not sufficient to behold such elegance and beauty. Our entire body should have eyes with no eyelids so that we can have unlimited darshan of Krishna without blinking. So this, in this text which we cited here from Bhagavatam, the words are Naryo and Narat. Naryo and Narash means, Nara means like Narayan, the reservoir of all living entities. So Nara and Nari, we say Nara Nari, Narahari, half man, half lion. You've heard this term, I think so, Narahari. Nara means man, Nari means woman. So Naryo Narash indicates men and women. Not only do we women, Nari Samari, the gopis of Vrindavan, not only do we desire to drink the beauty of Krishna through her eyes. But even the men of Braj, men and women, they want to drink the nectar beauty of Krishna's lotus face. So Radha and other gopis, and Subal and even the Priyanarmasakas, even the gopas and the gopis, they both relish the sweet beauty and love and relish like anything to see the beauty of Krishna's lotus face. So these are, this is, of course, this describing the beauty of Krishna's face and the hankering of the devotees to relish that. And this is all part of one of Krishna's unique qualities, which distinguishes him from any other form of Godhead. There are 64 qualities of Krishna, and one of them is Rupa Madhurya, sweet form. So in Braj, Krishna displays, Bhagavan, in the form of Sri Krishna, displays four unique qualities: Prema Madhurya, Leela Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, and Vena Madhurya. And these qualities are present in the most complete form. For this reason, there is a special importance and a distinguishing virtue that Brajadham has over any other holy abode. And that so this is the topmost abode because Bhagavan displays these qualities here. Bhagavan has other abode, holy abodes, Ayodhya and Dwarka, etc., Mathura. But only here in Brajadham does he display these four qualities: Vena Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, and Leela Madhurya. So this dham is distinguished. And Brajananda and Sri Radharaman and the Brajagopikas are the greatest devotees and the greatest form of the Lord. So these few verses are an elaboration from Bhajan Rahasyam itself, which is Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself is trying to help us understand this definition, further understand the definition of Bhava Bhakti, which says that one's heart becomes softened by three different tastes. And the first one is Bhagavat Prapti, Abhilash, an intense desire to attain Krishna. So if you don't hear about Krishna, or don't perceive Krishna, or read about Krishna's beauty, his Rupa Madhurya, his Leela Madhurya, so right now we're hearing about his Rupa Madhurya, his sweet form, then nothing can arise, no desire. Without knowledge, no desire can arise. We often say, can you desire something you don't know? Can you desire to have something you don't know about? Think about it. It's illogical. It doesn't make any sense. To desire something you don't know about. So how can you desire? Prapti means desire, to acquire, to have, to hold, to possess, to be part of. So how can you desire Krishna Prapti Abhilash? How can you have an intense desire, very deep and intense desire to attain Krishna? We don't know anything about him. We've never heard anything about him. So in these few verses and commentaries, we're hearing very much about the beauty of Krishna. And for those on the level of bhava, they will relish this. They will relish different ecstasies by reading these verses and chanting Nam Bhajan and meditating on this sixth Leela of the Lord, which is Shayan Leela, 6 o'clock to 8:36 in the evening. All these things will happen for the bhava bhakti. It's called Jata Rati Sadaka. Rati means bhav. But for us, Ajata, or for the Ajata Rati Sadaka, Rati means bhav, who have not awakened or attained bhava, received this touch of bhava in our hearts, then we read these verses and hear these topics, then it increases our abhilash, our desire to attain Krishna. Oh, he's so beautiful. He's so sweet. He's so attractive. He's so charming. Oh, Krishna, may I increase my desire to attain you, to see you, to serve you. So this has a very positive effect on us also. So there are there's three more verses to describe this very first symptom of bhava. One of the symptoms of bhava is ruchibhi, this awakening of these three types of taste, deep taste of Bhagavat Prapti Abhilash. So we'll continue tomorrow to hear these further descriptions of Krishna's beauty from the Bhagavatam. Sri Bhajan Rahasyam Ki Jai.